Recycling in Maine, thinking about it in new ways. Today is America Recycles Day, which means different things to different people. For some, it is a reminder to think before just tossing everything in the trash. For others, it is a fake day of recognition, an example of greenwashing by corporate America. In any case, here in Maine, recycling is in the news. This past year, Maine became the first state to pass an extended producer responsibility for packaging, or EPR law. It will require manufacturers to help pay for the cost of recycling the packaging of their products. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss how that law will work and the current state of recycling in Maine. Maine Calling is next. First, this news update. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Maine set a 50% recycling goal more than 30 years ago, and although we have made progress, we are nowhere near that. In the meantime, the world has changed with an explosion of online commerce, many new forms of packaging, far more awareness about the damage caused by plastics, a roller coaster ride in the international recycling market, and more. We're going to discuss all of that. Plus, Maine's new EPR law. We'll explain what that is today. Joining me, Shelby Wright, who is Eastern Region Manager of Engagement with Casella Waste Systems. Sarah Nichols, Sustainable Maine Director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine. And Matt Grondin, Communications Manager for EcoMaine. We invite your comments and questions. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. But part of the reason we're doing this program today as opposed to another day is this is formally America Recycles Day. It is Maine Recycles Week. Matt Grondin, and I'm going to start with you, but I'm going to ask all of you this question. What does this day, this week, mean to you? Matt, you go first.
Thanks, Jennifer, and thanks for having us all on the program. This is a lot of fun, and you know, I think a lot of fun too is Maine Recycles Week. It's a really a good chance for all of us, not just in the industry who live and breathe this stuff every day, but also, you know, anybody who's interested out there can really find what their niche can be. You know, find the thing that really gets them going, and focus on that mindfulness around solid waste. It's a really fascinating subject. It's a really interesting subject with lots of environmental and economic implications. And there's so much out there that individuals can do, that companies can do, that organizations can do to really reduce their footprint and in terms of solid waste and get us, you know, in Maine to the next step and hopefully, you know, reduce our reliance on single-use materials or, you know, compost, recycle, find out more about recycling. There are just so many different ways that Maine Recycles Week can really, really kind of reach into Maine's communities and have a big impact. So we're hoping that's just what it does.
All right, Sarah, I know that you're happy to be here, but I also know you're skeptical.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm always happy to talk trash. So I agree with everything that Matt said for sure. But to me, America Recycles Day is really just corporate propaganda. It's really frustrating to me. It's a holiday basically created by consumer brands corporations. You know, people like at Pepsi, Keurig, Dr. Pepper, McDonald's, Dow Chemical. They're all part of Keep America Beautiful. And they work together on this one day a year to pass blame on individuals and consumers for our recycling problems. And to me, that's really frustrating because people really do want to recycle and they want to do the right thing. But the system right now is set up against us where we're getting all of these products and packaging from these companies that aren't designed with recycling in mind, and they're not using recycled content in their packages that create that market demand that we need. So to me, I'm using this day as a day to kind of point the light back on them and say, actually, we would love to recycle more, but we think you need to do better too.
All right, Shelby, your turn.
Well, that's a lot to digest from both sides. So I'll say that, you know, Maine Recycles Week has been revived as a celebration of waste reduction and sustainability. I think that when we talk about recycling, it's very key to drill down on the fact that we're not just talking about what goes in the blue bin. We have to talk about responsibility, and whether that's on the part of corporations who put packaging into the environment and us consumers. But we have to refuse, reduce, reuse, repair, recycle. There are so many ways to act sustainably other than just putting, you know, the right packaging in the right blue bin so that it can be recycled in the aftermarket. We really have to look at what we as consumers do. And I'm not necessarily sure that there's a lot of guilt or blame placed on us for doing so, but I do know that corporations respond to green. They respond to money. If you refuse to buy the thing that is in the packaging that you find to be too much, then they will stop packaging it appropriately that way. And if we can get more sustainable packaging into our system, then we can all recycle more and we can all close the loop on our economy.
Shelby, you've said something I haven't heard before, but I like it. I've heard for a long time reduce, reuse, recycle, but you've added refuse into that mantra. Yeah. Refuse, well, reduce, reuse, recycle.
You know, I think, you know, in the waste industry, and we pick up what people put down, right? And we've been doing it for decades. And, you know, if people stopped putting it down, we wouldn't have to pick it up. And then we wouldn't have to worry about where it goes. So I think that the key is to really look at waste reduction across the board. And that's not just in, you know, the household goods, that's in all kinds of items like mattresses and carpets and our computers and our technology. And, you know, even in the way that we renovate and repair our houses, you know, things can be, you know, repurposed, things can be reused, things can be repaired, and way before they end up, you know, needing to be recycled. And, you know, it's not so much of what we put in the blue bin. I think it's keeping things out of the bin entirely.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Just on Friday, we did our Maine Calling Made in Maine gift guide. And one of the themes that emerged was how many people in Maine are using, reusing items and turning them into something else as products. Somebody called and talking about using old lines from boats to make swings. Somebody else calling mm-hmm. old bottles, making them into lanterns, really part of the ethic, I think, of Maine. Matt, I want to go back and talk about something I started the program with. My understanding is that since 1989, Maine has had a 50% recycling goal. Where are we now? We're in the 30s, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, Maine is, excuse me, above the national average, which is great. We're not too far above the national average, which is unfortunate. We're at about 36% at this point. And, you know, there's a ways to go. I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, the evolution in materials over you know, the last 25 years, say, and the evolution toward the light weighting of materials. You know, you have films and things like that that sometimes aren't as readily recyclable. And so, you know, that recycling rate has slipped. I think that there's the opportunity, though, going forward with the EPR legislation, with, you know, composting becoming front and center, or you know, food scraps and things like that. I think there's a real opportunity to kind of to focus on where we can make those improvements.
And I want to ask in just a second, I'm going to ask Sarah to explain the EPR legislation to us. But I wanted to ask what is even possible today with the kind of products and the kind of packaging that are out there. Years ago, and I'm talking 30 years ago, I worked at a TV station in San Francisco, California. And I remember we did a feature story about a man who recycled everything. He was he did a story. He was protesting his town's trash fee, because he didn't have any trash. And I'm wondering if today that would even be possible. Would it be possible with the kind of packaging that is out there in the market for someone to have no trash and be able to recycle everything? What is a possible recycling goal for somebody who is not living a very sort of alternative life, for somebody who's living a mainstream lifestyle? Is a 50% recycling goal a reasonable recycling goal for a community?
I think so. And I think there are lots of Instagram personalities who collect, you know, their trash in a jar for the entire year. And those kinds of things are those are real, very concerted efforts that take a lot of time and energy to accomplish. I think that at this point in time, to turn to compost, to turn to anaerobic digestion and food scraps, you know, where that's upward of 25, 30, 35% of the waste stream, where we can turn to that and say, you know, this is an opportunity to really improve the diversion rate or recycling rate. That represents, I think, a significant portion. As it is right now, I think a lot of the materials that can be recycled are in Maine. No doubt that there are lots of plastic bottles or jugs going into the trash, and we can and should be recovering those. But I do think that we need, you know, we need these policies to improve what is out there that can't be recycled at this point. And that's really, I think, the only way that we're going to approach 50%.
All right. So Sarah, Maine made news this year, becoming the first state to have an EPR law. I understand some other states have followed in our footsteps. I want you to explain to us as clearly as possible what it does, when it goes into effect, and what kind of impact you believe it will have on Maine's recycling rate and on the entire waste stream generally.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to discuss this. This is a law that Mainers should be really, really proud of. Maine is really leading the way in the nation in being the first state to make the producers of packaging, companies like Amazon, Walmart, Procter & Gamble, pay for our recycling programs instead of having Maine's property taxpayers pay for them. We are the first domino to fall in the United States. Oregon passed their bill just after ours, and there's a handful of other states who are pursuing it as well. But we're just following suit with the rest of the world, really. There's five provinces in Canada that have this type of policy, the entire European Union, countries on every single continent. And a lot of these programs have been in place for 30 years. And what we've observed is that their recycling rates are double to ours. There is a huge taxpayer savings. There's evidence of design changes in packaging. So when producers of packaging are on the hook for paying for that, and they might pay more for more wasteful packaging, they actually have an incentive to take a look at how much waste they're putting out there, take a look at how they might make changes to that packaging to save money. And there's evidence of that happening everywhere else. So this program, the law passed, but now we have a lengthy rulemaking process where we work out all the details. We have this existing municipal system in place, and, it's going to take some time to figure out how to loop all these producers in. So, but we need to balance that, careful time with, knowing that municipalities needed help yesterday. So, the DEP is saying the first payments to municipalities will be made by 2027. Oregon's law, they're saying 2025. So we'll see some payments being made to somebody in the United States in the next 5 or 6 years.
Do you think this will change? I'm thinking about just last night, I had to run to the hardware store and buy some light bulbs. The lanterns on by my front door, the light bulb was out. And I was thinking about this program, and the way the packaging for the light bulbs were, it was a cardboard backing and some plastic on the front. And I put the cardboard in the recycling, but that plastic was not recyclable. Is that the kind of thing that will change in the future? That kind of packaging will probably not exist because it was not designed to be recycled?
I mean, this kind of law is the only way to really target that kind of thing. I think some of the low-hanging fruit, like say packaging that's just completely unnecessary, I'd like to see that kind of go first. And then you know, and then get into those details about what the right packaging is for which product, because you do want the package to protect the product. You don't want breakage in there because that would just create more waste. But the idea is to, you know, not leave whatever mess that package is creating on the back of somebody else. It should be just, you know, incorporated into the cost of, you know, doing business, just like everything else a company does.
And Shelby, I know that part of your point, it's not even the packaging we see as consumers. It's a lot of what is, you see a lot of things that we don't even think about by going to the hardware store.
Well, that, you know, that's true. And I think that's what makes most everybody that's involved and works in the waste industry like the staunchest environmentalists you'll ever meet, because we see it every single day. And we know, you know, firsthand, the mass impact that packaging and just overall consumerism and disposable economy that we live in has on our resources and on our capacity to dispose of it properly, to give it the proper end of life, to recycle it, to recover it, and to develop the infrastructure, quite frankly, to deal with that. I mean, you know, in the industry, we, you know, let's recycle. Okay, well, how are we going to do that? And so the industry is largely responsible for figuring out the technologies and logistics of moving these products back and forth so that they can be properly managed. And hopefully with, you know, the extended producer responsibility law for packaging, what we'll see is more sustainable packaging that can be put into our material recovery facilities, that can be recovered, and that can be sold, so that when we take the next step into minimum content laws, you know, 10% of this package has to be made of recycled content, we'll actually have what's called the feedstock to generate those numbers. For example, if we don't have enough, if we can't collect enough plastic bottles, we can't have, you know, recycled plastic bottles, because we just won't have that, the ability to do that. And so I really am hopeful that we can take the benefits of this law and really look at the technology and enhance the infrastructure so that we can recover these materials better.
Sarah.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in and say that we actually have a minimum recycled content law for plastic beverage containers coming down the pike right now. This would create a minimum 25% recycled content by 2026 and 30% by 2031. And this has the support of, you know, the environmental community and the beverage manufacturers as well. They want to level the playing field and use more recycled content too. But the problem is recycled materials often, especially for plastic, cost more than the virgin materials. So when we have this kind of demand side intervention and these type of policies, it creates the stability in the marketplace that really helps these programs work.
We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, some of your comments and questions. We are talking about recycling. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Evergreen Home Performance, a locally owned energy efficiency company with career opportunities available. Details at evergreenyourhome.com/careers. As we celebrate our 60th anniversary, we are aware Thanksgiving is just around the corner. Perhaps Maine Public Radio is one of the things you are thankful for this year. This service that has kept you informed about so many important stories, the COVID-19 pandemic, vaccines, elections, climate change. You count on Maine Public for so many reasons. This service counts on you, too. On Wednesday, our 60th anniversary drive will get underway on Maine Public Radio, and we'll be asking you to be there for Maine Public by making an investment in the next 60 years. If you'd like to make your contribution before Wednesday, you can do so right now at mainepublic.org or by calling 800-866-1475. Thank you.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we are talking about recycling in Maine. My guest, Sarah Nichols, who is with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. She's Sustainable Maine Director. Shelby Wright, Casella Waste Systems, Eastern Region Manager of Engagement. And Matt Grandin, Eco Maine Communications Manager. Share your comments or questions by email, a brief email please, to talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Something pretty fun, if you go on our Facebook page, you can see that we have linked to last night's PBS NewsHour story about Maine's new law, and that is features both Sarah Nichols and the Eco Maine, Kevin Roach's manager at Eco Maine. I know, Matt, you organized that visit from the PBS NewsHour, so really fun to have a PBS NewsHour story. Maine featured nationally just the night before our program here today. Calling in now, Laura Marston, who is owner of Go-Go Refill in Portland. Laura, thanks for calling back to Maine Calling. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me on again.
Tell us about Go-Go Refill and tell us how you're doing.
So Go-Go Refill is a plastic-free refill shop here in South Portland, and our whole goal is to help people who are trying to reduce their waste, specifically to refuse single-use plastics. We've been open for just about a little over two years, and in our first 2 years, we've been able to help our customers refuse over 50,000 plastic packages and bottles. The way our store works is that if you bring your own container in, we have bulk home and body products. So think of that huge laundry detergent container that takes up half your recycling bin. You can bring that in and refill it, or a mason jar or something like that. And we have all sorts of home and body and cleaning products.
Wow. And so tell us what's next for you and for the store.
Well, what's next is we've gone mobile recently, so you'll see us popping up around Maine in our little red refill van. So that's been exciting. We had pop-ups this summer in Yarmouth and Biddeford, and we are hoping to get up in the Brunswick area. And we have a ton of – right now it's all holidays, obviously, because we're in retail. So right now we're just – have, a million zero-waste gift ideas and helping people give gifts that aren't trash.
Well, thank you so much and good luck to you. Laura Marston, owner of Go-Go Refill in Portland. So many calls and emails coming in. I'm going to go to a couple of those. This is an email from Edward. What if we required all retailers to have big recycling bins near the checkout lanes where people could remove any unwanted and excessive packaging and drop it in the bin for the responsibility of the retailer or manufacturer to deal with instead of us? For example, I always remove shoes from the shoebox and let the store recycle the shoebox when I purchase them. I also do this with other things if it's simple enough when I'm checking out. Just remove it from the box and leave the box with the retailer. Damage control, maybe? A lot of shoe stores will say that. Do you want to leave the shoebox? And I'm wondering, I'm going to throw this out to any of you. Is this an idea that's been suggested anywhere else? Does this work? Go ahead, Shelby.
Well, I was going to say, I think that we've had a system like that in place for single-use plastic bags and plastic film for years and years, returning the material to the point of sale to let the retailer handle it.
Well, and there is an email from Lynn. She asks, I recycle all clean plastic bags I can at our local Hannaford. I'm so happy they take them. But what happens after they leave Hannaford's? I understand they cannot really be recycled. Am I just shuffling them around with the endpoint always being a landfill or incinerator? I know a lot of people do that. Yeah. They take their plastic bags back to Hannaford. Where do those go?
So most of them go out of state to a processing facility that makes deck boards, composite lumber deck boards, a company called Trex. It's in West Virginia. That's probably a little further down the rabbit hole than you wanted to go. But, the point of the idea of source separation, like you take it back to the store, it's one material, it's clean. That is the best way to recycle things, is to make sure that you keep the materials clean and you put them in the proper recycling place to handle them.
All right. So Matt, go ahead.
Thanks. I think that, it's a great idea to give more opportunities to recycle and recycle properly. I think there are a couple things at play. In the end, is it a material that can be recycled, first off? It's great, cardboard, the cardboard or paperboard from the shoebox is readily recyclable. There's no question about that. But we don't want to get into a system where we have a drop off for something that may or may not end up actually being recycled. And the other thing is the convenience factor. And you know, I think that that when you get into a place where you have to drop things off, you're going to lose probably a little bit of participation by people who just take the thing home and then, you know, don't know what to do with it and put it in the trash. So we want to make it a system that is easily taken advantage of, so we can then capture all those recyclable materials and not the unfortunately not recyclable ones.
We'll go to Joanna calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Joanna, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say GoGo Refill is wonderful. I love their products. The person who called in before, who I guess was the owner, I would suggest that people try them out. But mainly I wanted to mention that, you know, a lot of us are getting more takeout food these days instead of eating in restaurants. And I find it so discouraging to get these gigantic plastic takeout containers when restaurants could easily be using cardboard boxes, you know, like Chinese food boxes. And I would encourage people to maybe when you're placing a takeout order to ask the restaurant if they have an alternative to be using cardboard or even aluminum foil or something like that, because I think that would make a big difference.
Joanna, thanks for your call. Sarah?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Joanna brought that up. We're seeing a big push around the world and the rest of the United States for more reusable, refillable takeout packaging. It's I think with Maine's population density, it's not coming here quite as quickly. But we did just have the state of Maine just released some guidance to restaurants and consumers saying that it's perfectly safe and acceptable to bring your reusable container to the restaurant and to, you know, refill with your bulk items. Cause I think some people are, you know, concerned with about a liability and cleanliness and all of that, but the state just issued really clear guidance on all of that. And this is where we really need to be pushing in the local policies and programs realm. So thank you for bringing that up.
So how does that work in other places, Sarah? Will places have like a standard refillable, say, bowl with a lid that you can bring back time and time again?
I think so. If you look into San Francisco, there are several just, you know, entrepreneurs that start businesses that they partner with restaurants to provide their reusable packaging. They'll take it, they'll clean it, they'll bring it back, and then they can use that same packaging with other restaurants as well. And they're finding, you know, these restaurant owners are excited to be saving all the money on this disposable packaging, and they feel better about putting less waste out there into their communities as well.
And you don't really need to go as far as San Francisco, though. I mean, there's several businesses and restaurants in downtown Bangor that started that practice like last year, and it's quite exciting. You know, you can get the packaging from the restaurant and then you can bring it back again and again and again, and they'll wash it for you and give you a new one and, you know, XYZ. And so it's a nice system to cut down on all of those to-go boxes that have just exploded into our lives.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Shelby. Thank you for calling, Joanna. That's great. And who wants to deal with all that anyway, brother? Let's see here. I want to go to this simple little question from Karen. It's an email. Matt, I'll send this one to you. How do we discard household batteries, C, D, double A's?
Sure. So batteries, in one way, are very simple, and then there's a more in-depth conversation to have afterward. Single-use batteries, alkaline batteries, like in your remote control or things like that, those go right into the trash. You know, there's just not a system in Maine to recycle those. At Eco Maine, we have a waste-to-energy plant where they'll be combusted to generate electricity, and we'll recover the metal as best we can after that. But the thing about batteries is the rechargeable batteries, which represent a real threat to facilities like ours and like Casella's, where they'll start fires in our facilities. And so the best way to deal with rechargeable batteries is through an existing EPR program in Maine with an organization called Call 2 Recycle. And they have a really great locator tool on their website where you can go and find a drop-off location. You know, usually it's a hardware store, but sometimes it might be an electronics store or something like that. And those rechargeable batteries still have recyclable material that can be recovered and redeployed again. And at the same time, keeping our workers and our facilities safe.
All right. So we'll put information about Call to Recycle on our Facebook page and the Maine Calling webpage. Thanks for that information. We're going to go to a call now. This is from Representative Paige Ziegler. Hi, Paige. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking the call. And Sarah, how are you? And Shelby, it's nice to see you again and not up on Mount Trashmore. I've been in the Environment and Natural Resource Committee for 6 years. I want to thank Sarah for pushing the EPR bill through. It was a very difficult bill. A lot of work went in. And also want to thank Representative Nicole Kurowski, who was the sponsor to that bill. I'm also the chair of the Unity Area Recycling Center. I just want to talk about the fact that we survived during this very downturn. It was very hard. We had to move around. But there's two approaches to recycling. One is more labor intensive. We put out a clean product, which we get more money for at the end, but it takes individuals to handle that. And then the other one is a single stream, which is just all pushed through there. I was up at Juniper Ridge, the state landfill, in Saul Shelby on Friday, and if anybody wants to really get a feel for what solid waste we produce out there, you should stand up there. You can see all across Maine, from Katahdin down to Mount Washington. Beautiful view, but you're standing on a hell of a lot of trash. The issues around plastic, the numbers, we really need petroleum chemical companies have been subsidized. And we really need to look at the fact that it's cheaper to produce virgin plastic than it is to recycle it. Until, as Sarah mentioned, until we get to that point, and that has to be done through regulations, we're not going to really be able to recycle the plastic more. And the numbers are disingenuous, and it's very hard to recycle plastic. We take it at Unity. We have 8 towns, and each town pays in a certain amount a year, but we also, the other issue, what we do is that you take bags of trash to the transfer station, but, and you have to pay for those, but if you take a bag of recyclables to the recycle center, you don't pay for that. It's subsidized through the towns. So essentially what we're doing is we're reducing the cost to homeowners to get rid of their trash if they can recycle. And Shelby should talk about regionalization. The other issue we have in the state is transportation of recycles. Up in Aroostook, you know, they don't produce, they don't have that many people, so they don't have that many recyclables. To move those, that product down to the south where it's recyclable or out of state where it's recyclable, it's very expensive. And so that adds on to the cost of recycling. Solid waste is an issue the state really needs to look at. And it's very important. And I probably spoke more than I needed to, but if you're a legislator, you often do. The other thing I want to mention is that what we try to do at Unity Area Recycling Center is we try to not just have the towns involved, but anybody can pay a $30 annual fee and they can bring their recyclables to us. So the other towns outside of those 8, if their towns have cut down, they can come to us. That's a little bit of a sales pitch for Unity that I want. But we're trying our best, we're working hard, and we are moving product again.
And Representative really Ziegler, thank you for calling in. Shelby, I'm going to toss it to you.
Yes, thank you very much, Representative Ziegler. And as a pitch for Maine Recycles Week, I'll let you know that Unity Area Recycling is having a tour today. They're usually closed on Mondays, but they're doing a tour of their facility. So residents can go in and see how the guys there do their job, how Jeff and Steve do their job. They also have this really cool glass crusher for recycled glass, which is also another problematic material. But I think, you know, Representative Ziegler really touched on a couple of issues, and one of which is the difficulty in recycling a lot of plastic. And part of, you know, the industry's job is to figure out how to market this material, how to sell it, where to take it, how to repurpose it. And if there is no market for it, it essentially becomes unrecyclable. And I think that's another reason why the EPR law here in Maine is so very, very important, is because we can, where they're working on a definition for readily recyclable. And once we can figure out what can be recycled where in the state of Maine and kind of the lowest common denominator and work our way up, I think that's really gonna push the packaging and the producers to put more sustainable packaging in so that it can be recovered and it can be recycled with a market that is there for it.
And Sarah, I know you wanted to talk about some creative legislation in California.
Yeah. So just in the same vein, I think, you know, this with what's readily recyclable and what's not, California just passed pretty landmark legislation. It's a truth in labeling law. So soon their packaging producers will be restricted from putting a recycling label on something that's not recyclable. Which is really important. Maine's EPR law will get at that because there'll be incentives to have proper labeling, but the California law is a little bit more aggressive. And I think with an economy like California's, that's where you're gonna really see that change in design and that change in labeling.
We do need to take another quick break. We are talking about recycling on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering basement waterproofing solutions, easternbasements.com.
I'm Scott Tong. The new book, Black Food, also comes with a playlist. Editor Bryant Terry says it's a full sensory experience.
I wanted the book to be about our agency, our brilliance, our magic, you know, what happens when we aren't focused with this albatross of white supremacy.
African-American recipes and history, next time on Here and Now.
Here and Now, coming up shortly after Maine Calling from 12 noon until 2, here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the Bangor Symphony Orchestra's Masterworks 2, Beethoven's 8th. Join the BSO on Sunday afternoon, November 21st, as they perform works by Mendelssohn, Beethoven, and more. Maine Public members are eligible for 15% off in-person tickets to the concert. For complete details on the performance and the Maine Public member discount, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the latest news from the world of recycling. Joining us, Matt Grondin with Eco Maine, Shelby Wright with Casella Waste Systems, and Sarah Nichols with the Natural Resources Council of Maine. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Find us on email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or to Instagram. And if you aren't able to get through, please continue the conversation on Facebook. Matt, there was really dire news for several years there about the recycling market. I remember being out at Eco Maine and seeing just piles and piles of cardboard and newspapers piled up. Kevin Rochin made the decision to hold on to that material instead of sending it to China because the prices were so low. That's not the case anymore, is it? Things have changed.
It's not the case anymore, thankfully. So we've over the last year or so, I'd say we've seen some really great movement in terms of pricing increases for all of our recyclable commodities. Some modest and some extremely good. We're looking at a combination of things that kind of happened here. You know, I think first was a real push for domestic investment here in North America. That means more facilities are much more eager to take post-consumer materials, which is driving up demand. And also the pandemic really changed where our waste is coming from. When businesses closed, for example, residential recycling became much more front and center due to all the materials we're using at home, especially cardboard, if you can picture my house, especially with deliveries of different kinds, and so that origin of the material kind of changed. So when those mills and facilities needed the material, rather than looking to a commercial line, they really looked at the residential sector and the post-consumer material coming from Maine residences. And so, you know, the pricing has really, like I said, increased. Paper, for example, is a really drastic example where 2 years ago, for example, we were paying, or holding on to it, as you pointed out, or paying to get it to the market to be recycled. And now, you know, we've had this swing where we've gone from, you know, a year ago paying $25 or $30 a ton to now we're realizing $85 or $90 a ton. For that same material. So, you know, this domestic investment has really paid off. I think most of the industry experts tend to agree that it'll kind of stabilize over the short term. But the more we can do to keep that material clean, to keep it readily recyclable, as we've been talking about, those are the things that'll keep that momentum going.
All right, a couple of related emails here. A message from Dave. The year is 2021, and we are still not able to recycle in Stetson ever since the facility in Herman closed down. And then an email from David. Please address the fact that in Maine, roughly half the state, north of Waterville, municipalities provide no recycling programs for their residents. Shelby, I'm going to turn to you. Lots of frustration out there, and then I'll go to you, Sarah.
There is lots of frustration out there. And could you repeat that statement? He said north of Waterville?
He says roughly half the state north of Waterville and municipalities provide no recycling programs for their residents. So if that's wrong, Sarah, go ahead. I'll let you go.
Yeah, well, I think he's getting an important point here. Municipalities all decide what to do with their recycling programs on their own. We have a really fragmented system. So depending on the decision makers in your town and who's there and who you're partnered with, that's the strength of your recycling program. And the real problem here with recycling right now is that it's funded by property taxes. And recycling on average, according to DEP, is 67% more expensive than disposal. So these towns are often faced with this really difficult decision between paying more to have a recycling program or paying less to just throw it all in the trash. And it really depends on who's there. So the EPR system is designed to really change that, have more uniform recycling programs that are funded by the people making the mess in the first place.
We'll go to Eva, who's calling from Matinicus Island. Hi, Eva, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. Matinicus Island has a, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Has a kindergarten to eighth grade one room school, and I was the teacher there years ago, and now I'm the solid waste and recycling coordinator, and our recycling and junk situation involves a lot of community volunteering. So the current school teacher and his wife, Todd and Alex, and I are trying to pull together a program which will hopefully go through the rest of the school year, but beginning with Maine Recycles Week, where before junk, bicycles, bed springs, appliances, lawn mowers, any of that sort of large junk item gets loaded onto the truck and sent off on the ferry for disposal, the kids get a look at it to see if there is anything that can be repaired, if there's any parts that can be salvaged, if there's pieces that they can take off either for art projects or for repair parts. Kind of just to set the example and teach the lesson of giving something a second look before it gets chucked. Think about repairing. Sometimes repairing isn't practical, but maybe there's something useful on there. Think about making art, but also just giving something a second look before you throw it out, and also teaching using tools, because all kids like using tools, and that's something a lot of kids don't get to do that much anymore. So since we have a very small population, we don't have to go through too many layers of administration to get permission for this sort of thing. This is a good place to try out a project like that. So we're sort of emphasizing repair and maybe part salvaging along with our school kids.
Shelby.
So, hi, Eva. Eva is a recycling rock star, for anybody who doesn't know. But I am lucky enough that I get to travel around the state and visit a lot of transfer stations. That's part of my job. And there are some wonderful things happening out there. Just like Eva was talking about, that they talk about regeneration or repair cafes, where at the transfer station, if you drop off your leaf blower or your bicycle or your fishing poles or whatever it is, they actually repair them on site. And then the residents can come and purchase them or buy them for like a small donation. And then that goes back into that kind of thing. So there are all kinds of, as you know, Sarah mentioned, different approaches at the local level because of our kind of a spider web of solid waste infrastructure in the state. But there are some wonderful things happening at the local level that really should be celebrated and promoted and copied around. So more regionalism is always, I think, a good idea.
Sarah.
Yeah, I wanted to spin off that and say that there's a lot of right to repair laws that are springing up in state legislatures as well. And this is more related to, again, to corporations who are selling their wares, their electronics or whatever it is, and saying, hey, you want to sell this? Great. But can you let us know? Can you give us a repair manual so I can fix it or make sure you make replacement parts available for us so that we can repair these things instead of throwing them out and buying a new one?
Thanks for your call, Eva, and good luck out there. I'm going to go, let's see here, to Fran, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Fran, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Thank you. One of my big peeves is the fact that all of these water bottles that are constantly moving off the shelf, I wish there was a way for people to go get their water tested so that they could see that they don't need to buy that water at all. You know, like Siemens and Nestle and Bluefin and a couple of other, we have foreign international companies coming into this country to take our water and then bottle it and sell it back to us like they did in Poland Springs. And I just wish there was a way to convince people that they would be better off just getting a Brita filter or something if they were really concerned. But get your water tested so you know one way or the other, and you'll stop buying them.
Fran, I have a feeling our guests would agree with you.
Yes, Maine has very clean water to drink.
Do. And I think she also touches on another point. I mean, you know, when I was growing up, water wasn't in a bottle. And I've been talking sustainability issues and recycling and reduction since I was in college when I was 19 years old. And I've had the same conversation then that I'm having now. And so I think that she's absolutely right, that we need to really kind of look at what's going on and our own personal choices as well, but not to necessarily demonize them, but to just be conscious that small individual steps can have large, large impacts if a lot of people do them.
Fran, thanks for your call. An email from Matt here. I'm wondering if there's a recycling program in Maine for styrofoam. Is there a cost and how easy is it? I'm going to send this question from a person named Matt to our guest named Matt. Matt, boy, styrofoam's a problem, isn't it?
Styrofoam is a problem. I promise that's not a plant email. It really is. It's a problem material because, you know, technically styrofoam can be recycled. There are a few places that do it. However, if up here in Maine, we're looking at loading up a truck with styrofoam in it. That truck isn't going to weigh a whole heck of a lot more loaded with styrofoam than it was empty. You're basically shipping air for huge distances. I mean, I think the closest place that will do it is in New Jersey, and it's just not economically and certainly not environmentally efficient to do that. So I think it's great that Maine was the first state to have a foam ban on takeout containers. And, it's really, it's a problem material that continues to confound us, though, you know, even with electronics coming packaged in styrofoam, that's inescapable. So that's the reason it's not recyclable in Maine.
I'm going to go to John calling from Freeport. John, we're coming toward the end of the program, so if you could speak quickly, that would be great.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, I get my birdseed locally, and it's always was in paper large paper bags, but now it comes in a bag different. And I was taking the bag up to the recycling center with all my papers and everything, and they tell me that they can't recycle the bags, which seems odd. And apparently it's a number 4 plastic of that sort, and it says it can be recycled, but apparently Echo Maine doesn't take that. Do you have any suggestions where those can go?
Well, it's an Echo Maine question, Matt.
Yeah, sure. So again, you know, getting back to Sarah's point about, you know, truth and labeling and so on and so forth, that is not a material that that Echo Maine nor most other facilities like us in the country will accept. You know, some plastic films can be recycled by taking them back to the grocery store. You know, I'm not sure if I caught it. I'm not sure if that's one that qualifies for that drop-off program, though.
I'm sorry about that, John. My other guests are looking perplexed as well. Sorry not to be able to help you more. We're going to try to squeeze in another call. Barbara in Kennebunkport. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Hi. You had been talking about restaurants that you can bring back the takeout containers. Is that only for specific restaurants that are doing that now, or is it throughout the state?
Shelby, that's just in a few restaurants now, correct?
Well, I think to Sarah's point earlier was that they've, you know, issued guidance on the fact that you can bring a to-go container with you into a restaurant and then instead of getting their own container. But there are restaurants that also have their own programs as well, so that you can, you know, reuse the same cup or reuse the same material when you take to go and bring it back, and then they'll wash it for you and give you another one. But like Sarah had said, that, you know, take your own to-go container and hand it to the waitress or waiter at the end of the meal.
So Sarah, we just have a little bit of time, about a half of a minute. So if it's a restaurant that you're familiar with and it's your favorite restaurant, you could take something. And if you know the folks, say, could you please just, if I bring you this container, fill it up so I could take it away.
Yes, and you could take it one step better if you know that restaurant owner and ask them to adopt a more, you know, a new policy where that's what they do. That would be even better.
All right. Well, I really appreciate all of you. And many links were mentioned on this program. We tried to capture those and we'll put those on our website as well. So we appreciate all of you being with us today. And I do encourage you to go online and find the PBS NewsHour story from last night featuring Sarah Nichols and Kevin Roach at Echo Maine. Our guest today, Shelby Wright, Eastern Region Manager of Engagement at Casella Waste Systems, Sarah Nichols, NRCM, Sustainable Maine Director, and Matt Grondin, Communications Manager for Echo Maine. Today's sound engineer, Sandra Harris, Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit our website for not only for links mentioned on today's program, but for the Maine Calling archives. Tomorrow on the program, our tech team returns to answer your personal technology questions in time for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.